Hey everybody, welcome back to Caped Chronicles episode number 54. That's right, it is the infamous number 54. Why is it infamous? Well, we just don't even know, but it's infamous now because we're going to be watching Watchmen from 2009. This is July 12th of 2020. I am one of your magnificent hosts. I am Mike. You can find me on Twitter at the DC Fanboy. And another one of our magnificently perfect hosts is Fred. How's it going?
Wow. I love it.
I'm so ready to speak. Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, he's not calling me. I'm doing really good. Started up a new Instagram food account. You'll have to jump into our Discord if you want to see that. I'll tell you all about it. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Freddy Wong Kenobi, FreddyWon Kenobi.
All right. Let's see. The next magnificent person on the podcast is Carrie. What's going on?
Hey, I am really excited to talk about this movie. I think I might be the only one. I may be the lone defender again, guys.
I don't know. I could be a closet fan. You just don't know.
Really?
No, but that's okay.
I didn't think so.
In just a second.
I didn't think so.
Oh. And the last magnificent person, but do you use the word magnificent? Should we use the word magnificent?
Maleficent?
Maleficent person.
Ooh, wow.
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Magnificent Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. And if I wasn't, I don't care. Because it's 2020, and right about now, that sounds about right.
No kidding.
Okay.
Oh. All right. So, there's not really too many announcements. You guys can follow us on the network as far as network announcements itself goes. We do have a YouTube channel that we record movie chatter, Echo Base, and random chatter on currently. And when we actually have trailers, trailer breakdown. But again, we have not had a movie draft since, well, March. And I kind of miss the movie drafts. All the drunkenness and the the name calling and swearing and bidding of two, three, my lord, three, and all of those kind of things that happen.
He makes us sound like such degenerates. What's up with that, guys?
Let me just make something clear, Mike. I am not a drunk.
As she cracks open a bottle or a can of...
A can of something alcoholic.
This episode is brought to you by Pabst Blue Ribbon, award-winning beer.
Aboard women.
I've had too many.
That's a dong of an experience right there.
Boom.
Oh.
Boom. Whoosh. Wow. Oh. All right, guys. Bad. Well, we are talking about The Watchmen from 2009. So, as we move into this movie, we're going to talk a little bit, and they don't know it yet, but I'm going to do something a little different when we get to our discussion channel or section of this podcast. They just don't know it yet. And they'll be in for
you, you love how you'd like to drop these things on us while we're recording?
Because why not?
Because then we can call in sick.
Because he doesn't give us time to object or critique or suggest that something
Listen,
different.
This is what the people have wanted.
It is?
I don't know. They just don't know it.
He's forcing him.
Making stuff up, Mike.
He's forcing his ideals on us. Like the comedian forced himself on one of the characters.
Hello.
He did not succeed.
Oh boy, he did not succeed.
Technically he did.
He did later. but not well, in the way
that thought. Was that the later one was consensual.
Yes. So, about Watchmen, Fred, why don't you take us a little bit down the summary lane of this movie?
Sure. In 1985, where former superheroes exist, the murder of a colleague sends active vigilante Rorschach into his own sprawling investigation, uncovering something that could completely change the course of history as we know it.
All right. Andrea, what about a little bit about our box office? Where does this movie come from?
All right. So, the distributor was Warner Brothers Pictures. The runtime was 2 hours and 42 minutes. That was a theatrical release. The director's cut was 3 hours and 6 minutes. And the one that Fred made me watch today was the ultimate cut, which was 3 hours and 35 minutes. I wanted to die.
Yeah, there's a bit of a sidebar here. So the Ultimate Cut adds back in the Tales of the Black Freighter movie, which they basically ended up releasing as a separate film. But for the Ultimate Cut, they cut it back into the movie, and it kind of messes with the flow a little. But it is accurate to the comic book.
So it was rated R.
Heck yeah.
On March 6, 2009, and the budget was 130 to 138 million, so around that range. Opening weekend domestic was 55 million. Lifetime domestic gross was 107 million. Worldwide gross was 185 million. And the Rotten Tomatoes score, the critics said it was 65%, and then audience said it was 71%.
Well, that audience was definitely liquored up.
Hey! All
right. And then in terms of movie competitions, there wasn't too many things that were competing against Watchmen at this time. In March, the best movies were I Love You, Man, Knowing, Monsters vs. Aliens, and 12 Rounds. And then in April, there was Earth, Obsessed, Fast and the Furious, and Fighting.
Ooh, Fast and Furious. I like it. Mm-hmm. The cast and crew. All right, let's see. The director was the one only, Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder also directed BVS, Man of Steel, Sucker Punch, and The 300. And the upcoming Justice League. Movie/ we don't know if it's series Snyder yet cut. On HBO Max, the Snyder Cut. Yes. The actors in this movie was Malin Ackerman, played Lori Jupiter or Silk Spectre 2. She also played on Rampage, Couples Retreat, 27 Dresses, and The Proposal. Billy Crudup was Dr. Manhattan or John Osterman. He was almost famous Big Fish.
Breathe, Mike.
Alien Covenant and Mission Impossible 3. Matthew Good was Adrian Veidt, also as Ozymandias, played in The Imitation Game, Downton Abbey, and The Crown. Carlo Gugino was Sally Jupiter or Silk Spectre. She played in The Haunting of House Hill, San Andreas, Jet, Gerald's Game, Sin City, Race to Witch Mountain. Jackie Earl Haley played Rorschach, also played in Alita, Shutter Angel, Dark Shadows, RoboCop, Shutter Island, Dark Shadows, RoboCop, LinkedIn.
All right, slow down.
Oh, I really messed. No, I say. Jeffrey Dean Morgan was Edward Blake or Comedian, known for Walking Dead, Supernatural, Rampage, Grey's Anatomy, and Batman vs. Superman.
That's right. He was
a big crew. Patrick Wilson played Dan Dreiberg or Night Owl. The Conjuring movies, Insidious movies, Aquaman, Annabelle movies, Superman vs. Batman, and The A-Team. Matt Frewer as Moloch. Was played in Max Headroom, Alter Carbon, Orphan Black, Fear the Walking Dead, and Falling Skies. Oh, he did a great job in Fear the Walking Dead, by the way. I don't remember him in Falling Skies, though, for some reason.
I don't either, but apparently
he played the general, so he had a hat on.
He's one of the generals, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
These last two are for the ultimate cut only.
Okay.
And the very last one I added for Andrew's benefit.
The ultimate cut only, which I did not watch that version. Gerard Butler played the sea captain, the 300, the Phantom of the Opera, How to Train Your Dragon, and Angel Has Fallen. And Jared Harris played Ridley, also in The Crown, The Expanse, Lincoln, Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. The composer of this movie was Tyler Bates, also composed Dawn of the Dead, 300, Sucker Punch, John Wick franchise, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Boom, boom, boom.
Okay.
So quite a cast of people in this movie.
Yeah, they had a phenomenal cast. I cannot complain about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we normally would do an origin of a hero for this section, but since this really isn't an origin story, this is based off of a comic, I figure we'd do that for this section. Watchmen is an American comic book maxi series by British creative team Alan Moore and artist Dave Gibbons and colorist John Higgins. It was published by DC Comics in 1986 and 87, and then collected into a single volume in 1987, The Watchmen, originated from a story proposal Moore submitted to DC featuring superhero characters that the company had acquired from Carlton Comics. They didn't say which I'm sure there's a link here I can go look at for which characters they acquired, but I'll look at that later. As Moore's proposed story would have left many of the characters unusable for future stories, the managing editor, Rick Giordano, convinced Moore to create original characters instead. And you know, we will see why when we get into the movie. Moore used the story as a means to reflect contemporary anxieties and to deconstruct and satirize the superhero concept. Watchmen depicts an alternate history in which superheroes emerged in the 1940s and 1960s, and their presence changed history so that the United States won the Vietnam War, and the Watergate break-ins were never exposed. In 1985, the country is edging towards World War III with the Soviet Union. Freelanced, costumed vigilantes have been outlawed, and most former superheroes are in retirement or working for the government, like the comedian or Dr. Manhattan. The story focuses on the personal development and moral struggles of the protagonists as an investigation into the murder of a government-sponsored superhero pulls them in out of retirement. Let's see. The commercial success of Watchmen has received critical acclaim both in comics and in the mainstream press. Watchmen Times list of 100 best novels as one of the best English language novels published since 1923. In a retrospective, the BBC's Nicholas Barber described it as the moment comic books grew up. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. And this story is not for kids.
No.
very much not for kids. Although the comic is phenomenal. I did finally read it when the series came out.
Is it similar to the movie?
The movie is actually very accurate to the comics. The only thing they changed was the end of the movie. At the end of the movie, Ozymandias drops a ginormous psychic squid on Manhattan. and that was written out of the movie, or that was changed for the movie because it would have taken too long to explain.
Wait, there was a giant squid?
Yeah.
I saw one in this movie.
Oh my god.
Not that giant squid, dude.
That's a dongle.
Wow. Okay, so maybe we should address this. Maybe we should get this out of the way.
Let's address the elephant in the room.
Let's address the elephant in the room. Okay, so for the most part in this movie, Dr. Manhattan is buck-ass naked.
So
he basically does not see the need for clothing like whatsoever. He wore a Speedo in the 60s, basically to, you know, cater to, you know, the sensibilities of the people around him. But sometime between the 60s and 1985, when the story takes place, he basically said, you know what, screw it.
I thought he only wore the protective layer of film when he was in Vietnam, just in case.
Why would he need to protect anything in Vietnam?
He didn't want to get like snagged or make anybody feel bad.
No, seriously, the only time he wears clothes is when he's doing media interviews, when he's at the comedian's funeral, and at like early on when he starts out as a superhero. Eventually, he's just like, clothing is just something I don't need to deal with.
I'm happy to see he's bald everywhere.
Yo, we have gone from PG to almost about PG-13, and it was not my fault.
No, it was not. But I think since everyone was going to be going with the phallic jokes for the rest of the episode, I figured I would get that part out of the way right up front, so that it's, you know, we address the elephant in the room.
I'm sorry, but I'm laughing because during the movie, like, I'm looking at my phone, I'm a little bit bored, I'm out of it, and all of a sudden Fred is like, look at the schlong going back and forth. And I look up and I was like, oh, and then he's like, oh, you missed it. He's about to reach for the control to rewind. And I was like, I don't need to watch that schlong.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well. So, as far as our backgrounds for this movie goes, this is the second time I saw this movie, and I don't remember the first time I saw this movie. So when I came back on screen, I'm like, whoa, all right, I don't remember this movie. So that was the second time I've seen this movie. Carrie, how about you? How many times have you seen this movie?
This is also the second time I've seen the movie. I'd heard of the comic book, but I never got around to reading it until at the beginning of this year. Or at the end of last year. I don't remember when the TV series aired. Prime Reading had it available for free, so I you know, downloaded it and read through it. It's been a while since the last time I saw the movie, but I've only ever seen the Ultimate Cut. I haven't seen any other version of it, so.
Yeah, I've the only versions I've seen was the theatrical. So I think I may be the only one who saw the theatrical release
Ironically, Zack Snyder is quoted as saying that the director's cut is the preferred cut because cutting the tales from the Black Freighter back into the movie kind of messes with the flow.
But, I don't even know what a Black Freighter is.
The tales from the Black Freighter. There's the guy at the newsstand. He's reading a comic book.
Okay.
And basically, it's the comic book he's reading.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
But like, it doesn't have anything to do with the Watchmen.
It does, but it doesn't. It's kind of because, in a way, it's a little more obvious. Because the Tales from the Black Freighter is about someone who has good intentions, but in trying to do the thing that he the good that he thinks he's trying to do, he ends up becoming a complete monster. It's a very overt way of explaining exactly what Ozymandias has been trying to do this right. for the entire movie.
Okay. All right. So, Fred, how many times have you seen this movie?
This was the first time I've ever seen this movie.
Oh, boy.
And certainly not the last.
You don't think this will be my last time? I think it might be my last time. I told Andrea that we needed to watch it again to truly appreciate it, and I almost died.
So I'm guessing, Andrea, you've never seen this movie either before this.
No, I actually have. I watched it with my parents, so I remember...
Well, that would have been awkward.
Oh.
That, Daddy.
No, it was not like that. No, so a lot of the scenes, I do remember them. I don't remember the ending of it. And I don't really know which one of the cuts I watched. I don't know if it was the theatrical, but there were some scenes that I do remember, like the jail scene, when the comedian dies, when they have sex in the spaceship.
I think everybody remembered that one, Andrea.
There was a flame.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fred saw that and he was like, are you kidding me?
Again, oh my goodness. It's accurate to the comic book. That's exactly what happens.
Oh boy.
She hit the button before they had sex. When they were in the garage.
All right. So here's how we're gonna play this game of pros and cons to this movie. Okay. All right. So let me ask, who, in your honest opinion, who loved this or who liked this movie?
I did.
Okay, so Carrie liked it. Who didn't? Okay, Andrew, hang on. Who did not like this movie?
I did it because we watched that 3-hour and 30-minute long movie. I don't know. Like, I feel like I would need to watch the shorter version to see if I would be more... No? Okay, so then I don't like it.
Okay.
Aww. Mike is shaking his head.
With that being said, who was kind of in the middle? Just,
Okay, so I have some criticisms over this movie, and I have some benefits over this movie, or pros. I thought the movie was a little long. Of course, we watched the Ultimate Edition. I really enjoyed the theme of the movie. It took a long time to get to the point of what was actually happening.
Yes.
And, there's a lot of cat and mouse, like, machinations going on.
There was so much, I forget the term for it, but they're setting up so much story in the beginning that they're missing the story for itself.
Well, there's a lot of misdirection, and I think I have the benefit of having seen the movie twice and having read the book, so I know it's like I know what's going on. I knew what was going on this time, and I had the storyline spoiled for me like years ago, but so I kind of knew what was supposed to happen, but I didn't know all the details. And knowing that Ozymandias is behind everything, kind of the second time around makes so much more sense.
I think that's where you have a big benefit and why you were able to enjoy this so much more, is you do have that history with the comic book and seeing it before. Coming into this fresh and not knowing anything about it, Andrea and I both really struggled with it. One of the things that we both noticed is how many similarities between this movie and a new TV series on Amazon called The Boys is.
Yeah.
There's really common themes that it really complemented each other and really made me appreciate how many things they might have taken from Watchmen for The Boys.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think the problem came to me with this movie was not, of course, was the length. I feel like they could have shaved off an hour, been fine. I think that the issue came is kind of like you were saying, Fred, that and Carrie, to kind of balance your point out as well, was that having known the comics, you understand you and you appreciate the movie. But for the general audience, when these when this comic came out, this graphic novel came out, that was in 1987.
Yeah.
You're in a whole different generation of people 22 years later in 2009, a whole different generation of people watching comic movies. And they're only – the ones watching this movie are the ones who grew up with Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, Iron Man, where everything is kind of broken down and the story is very succinct.
Uh-huh.
And then you go into this – and then now Zack Snyder, for the genius he is, you know, especially in like Man of Steel – all those other ones as we push those forward, he took a world that nobody can relate to in 2009, except for the older crowd. And I understand. I'm not trying to be rude to the older crowd.
Probably,
I'm just saying.
He's probably older.
But, like, your people
more
who were
crowd.
Who
I
were
think,
like...
50. I think there are two of us on this recording who were alive enough in the 80s
okay,
to know what the Cold War
Carrie,
was like.
In 1987, would you have read this book or this comic?
In 1987, I was 10.
So probably not,
probably
right?
Probably not.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is the people who were in their 20s in 1987 when this graphic novel came out, they would appreciate the movie in 2009. But somebody like me, who I wasn't born till 88, I was born a year after this graphic, this comic came out, this movie resonates nothing with me because...
Well,
I don't remember anything in the 80s except for the awesome music they got, Whitesnake. And then, but I just, when you have the Iron Man movies and the Spider-Man movies who tell the story so succinctly and so well, and then you introduce something completely different, I don't think it was a bad movie as far as I think the movie was misplaced in time. Like they were, I don't think it was the right time the movie came out.
I think one of the struggles that they had was going to what you're talking about, the Superman and Iron Man movies. There's no world building required. Okay, so it's set place now in what could be like common time. If you look at this movie, The Watchmen, it's taking place in a completely different universe where there's superheroes everywhere. So they have to do a lot of world building to get the stage set. So they can tell their story, and
it's,
that
well,
was a big struggle.
It's also an alternate timeline. I mean, okay. Right. And as I was talking about when I was going through the summary of what the comic was, this is a world where, because there were superheroes, we won Vietnam. Vietnam is actually the 51st state in the world of the Watchmen. Watergate never happened. Nixon
right.
is on his third term.
They're
getting
rid of the, what was it, the 22nd Amendment?
I don't remember.
Which allows them to have the third term?
Yeah, they allowed Nixon to have a third term. I think he was going to go for a fourth. And fast forward to the TV show, Robert Redford is president during the TV show. So that's the kind of timeline we're looking at. But and I get what you're saying, Mike, about you weren't alive in the 80s to understand the kind of world that was in. But I mean, I was 8. I remember, you know, the tail end of the Cold War. How much of it do you remember, Fred?
I remember it being a concern. I don't remember it being very serious. I'm a little behind you through the 80s, but yeah.
Yeah. I remember some of the hysteria about possible World War III, but this entire storyline just cranks it up to 11 and says, it says the only thing keeping the two big superpowers from total global annihilation is this one guy, Dr. Manhattan. And Ozymandias, knowing this, orchestrates a way to have the entire world both pissed off at Dr. Manhattan and completely afraid of him, so that they will never ever think to actually go as far as start World War III.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just felt really long to me. Like, I felt like it took a long time to get to the point in the movie. I think that, to me, the last 45 minutes of the movie, now I watched the theatrical release, the last 45 minutes was the best to me.
Well, that's when the pieces start to fall into place.
Right.
And that's when Rorschach, starts to put all the pieces together, and that's when Night Owl starts to put all the pieces together. That's when they go off to Antarctica to confront Adrian Veidt.
Right. That to me, that section, having no clue what happened in the previous 2 hours, that section was actually, really, really good. So I'll give it that. That was really good. I thought the effects were pretty good in this movie for a 2009 film.
Well, I think that's the other thing about why it took so long for them to adapt this to film. It's like they needed to wait until the effects were good enough, especially to get Dr. Manhattan right.
Right.
True.
No, I think that the costumes, the CGI, the special effects, they did pretty good. I just feel like the story needed a little bit more polishing in order for it to flow better. There was a lot of times where things cut to different characters, to different scenes, and it just disrupted the flow of a lot of the storylines and how they all came together. But I feel like it's such an interesting world that I would not be, for example, opposed to watching the show. I think this would have been a lot better as a show than a movie, because there needs to be a lot of world building.
Okay.
So they really don't do a whole lot of world building even in the comics, or at least what world building there is, there's side passages at the end of each issue. It's a 12 issue miniseries, so at the end of each issue they have excerpts from the first Night Owl's book, or they have a long treatise on how the world has changed.
Right.
Because we have Dr. Manhattan in the world, and the whole concept of we're living in the shadow of Manhattan. And he's always gonna be, and we've somehow been convinced that he's gonna be watching over us this entire time. Mm-hmm. Even from Mars. So yeah.
Anything else?
I know we try to stay away from politics here, but I kind of found some similarities between what Ozymandias was trying to do and some of the approaches globally to the pandemic. Like, there are those who are seeing the death tolls of the pandemic and going, well, these are acceptable losses.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding, right?
And
the entire Eastern Seaboard. That's okay.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it was kind of better illustrated in the Black Freighter storyline, but that is what Ozymandias was trying to do. He was trying to set up a scenario where it was obvious that Dr. Manhattan was going to do this thing. It wasn't Dr. Manhattan, it was Ozymandias. it was obvious that Dr. Manhattan, that in quotes, Dr. Manhattan was going to do this thing and kill a whole lot of people so that the rest of the world would not go to war and kill off billions. It's kind of a similar note to Fred Andrew. Did you guys watch Torchwood?
No.
No. Oh. Children of Earth. If anyone's listening to this and they've seen Children of Earth, there's a similar theme there. Like how many people are you willing to sacrifice in order to save the planet, basically?
Right.
And that's pretty much what Ozymandias was banking on.
You know, I really did like Rorschach and the character of Rorschach. I will say mm-hmm. that. I found his character
very... I liked him until they took off his mask.
Yeah, I found his character very intriguing.
I agree.
And I just... I loved that... I don't know why, but I really love that deep guttural voice he had mm-hmm. under that mask. I don't know why.
I kept asking Andrea if this was Christian Bale. It's Batman.
Ew.
With pseudo Batman.
I did like his line when he was in jail. It's like, well, now see, I'm not locked up in here with you. You guys are locked up in here with me.
Right.
Yeah, good line.
And yeah, I mean that's basically what we're. That is a kind of Batman-esque type line. You know, Batman doesn't get locked up in Arkham with all the insane people. All the insane people get locked up in Arkham with Batman.
Yep.
And I liked him when he was leaving the prison, and he says, "I got to use the bathroom." Oh, poor all right, little we'll guy. Wait. So I like Rorschach. I struggled with Night Owl because so I thought the character was good. It just I feel like they tried to play him too much like Batman to me. It felt like I mean maybe it was just me.
Maybe.
And then of course you had Laurie. Silk Spectre 2. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of who the other people were. Of course, you had Dr. Manhattan. I wish, for some reason, I kept thinking that like Comedian never really died, that he was like the big bad at the end. I don't know why.
I kept thinking that as well.
Yeah. I remember thinking that the first time I saw this. Like he's not actually dead, except that there's a funeral. Except no, he's not actually dead. He's probably behind this. But then it made more sense that the Comedian was the first person to figure out who was actually behind it, and to understand that this was a big that Ozymandias was playing this off as a big cosmic joke.
Yeah.
Which is why in the comics the ginormous squid makes more sense, and why that that carries over to the TV show.
Anything else, guys?
No.
Andrew's like, can we just move on to the next movie?
I didn't notice Jared Harris. In the ultimate cut.
Huh? He was Ridley, the head.
Oh.
The second in command.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I wish we had more of the Comedian in this movie just because I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
I do too.
I think he's an amazing actor. So.
He kind of served his purpose and he's the Comedian because he basically figures, you know, everything is a, you know, if you have to laugh at it or else.
Nothing.
Or else nothing.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead then and move on to our next section. If nobody's got anything to say about it. Plot holes, Carrie. Do we have any plot holes or goofs or anything like that in this movie?
Yes. Okay. So, during the Kennedy assassination scene, the police are seen writing newer post-1994 Harley-Davidson FLH police motorcycles. In 1963, Harley's FLH models only came with spoke wheels, one front brake disc, and the rear shocks were forward of the saddlebags and visible, not hidden behind the saddlebags as shown.
But this is an alternate universe.
Yes, that is a possible. That is a caveat there. The Phil Caputo book Equation of Evil, seen in Hollis Mason's apartment next to the television during the Rorschach Patterson news footage, was not published until 1996. Even in the alternate history, this book probably would not have just happened to exist 11 years early. The camera used at Nixon's press conference wasn't introduced until the mid-1980s, although, again, there are probably advances in technology that could account for that.
Okay.
Character errors. Dr. Manhattan describes a circulatory system appearing on the grounds of a government base. However, what is depicted is clearly the nervous system, as it features a brain and spinal cord, but no heart or lungs. This error is repeated in the novel.
Good job, Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. When Adrian Ozymandias is being interviewed in his office, the reporter states that he is the second watchman to reveal his secret identity, the first being Hollis Mason, Night Owl 1. Mason was a member of the Minutemen, the precursor to the Watchmen, which didn't form until he had retired and passed the Night Owl mantle to Dan. Oops. Near the beginning of the movie, Hollis Mason, the first Night Owl, is listing his fellow Minutemen and forgets about Silhouette.
Oh, dang it.
We barely see Silhouette. When we do see her, she's mostly dead.
Dead.
She was killed. It basically would have been considered a hate crime now. She was because she was a lesbian.
Yep.
Continuity. In the prison, as Silk Spectre and Night Owl are fighting the inmates down the cell block, Silk Spectre's boots go from high stiletto heels to flats. I would not be fighting in stilettos.
No.
The third and final ink blot shown to Rorschach by the psychiatrist is not the same after his flashback.
Speaking of ink blots, I actually liked the image that his exploding body makes in the snow at the very end. I thought that was fabulous.
That was very appropriate. I think that's also a translation from the comic, too.
Yeah, I really liked it.
It was good.
In the main titles, Night Owl stands up and his head completely covers the 1940 on the sign behind him. In all subsequent shots of the photo of the Minutemen 1940, the banner hangs unobstructed above his head. In the beginning of the movie, when the comedian Edward Blake is thrown through the glass window, midway down his body turns face down to the concrete, which matches how he dies in the comic. Yet, when the camera shows the comedian, he is lying face up instead of face down.
Well, maybe he just rolled over real quick. Maybe he was uncomfortable.
When we see the cigarette in Moloch's hand, it is burnt almost all the way down. When we see it again from another angle, it is about halfway.
Oh, snap. Patting that fool.
Yeah, oops. When Rorschach searches the comedian's apartment following the crime scene investigation, after jumping from the window, he searches the place with his flashlight. He shines his torch to his left towards the kitchen, but in the next shot, the light is shining over the picture of Sally Jupiter with the knife stuck in it on the opposite side of where his flashlight was pointed. Okay. Crew or equipment visible. At around 5 minutes during the opening fight, as the comedian is thrown across the room, director Zack Snyder can be seen huddling between the drawer and a brick wall, lower left-hand corner of the screen. Snyder points this out during the during his live Blu-ray commentary.
That's awesome.
Oops, forgot to clean that up. Let's move on.
Did he really forget to clean it up? Or maybe
he wanted his own cameo.
He wanted to be in the movie.
Maybe. At Karnak, in some of the close-ups of Night Owl's face, the reflection in his goggles show actor Billy Crudup, in his motion capture suit, covered in blue dots, instead of a full rendering of Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, crazy.
Incorrectly regarded as goofs. When the coffin is being lowered into the grave, Dr. Manhattan's glow is not reflected off of it. This is because Dr. Manhattan can turn the glow off if he so chooses. One would not be glowing at a funeral, so Dr. Manhattan does not. Dr. Manhattan he doesn't understand social graces, but he's kind of like Sheldon Cooper. He knows when to turn things down because he knows that it's expected.
Yes.
Otherwise, social convention. He knows about the socialist convention and he observes it when necessary. Most of the time, it's just not necessary. Or he finds it not necessary. In the movie, the United States won the Vietnam War. However, one of Veidt's monitors is playing Rambo First Blood Part 2, a movie about avenging America's losses in Vietnam. In Veidt's world, Rambo must be regarded as an imaginative science fiction movie set in an alternate universe. if you look closely at all of the framed newspaper articles, especially in the opening credits, the articles themselves are just series of repeating texts and paragraphs. However, this may be intentional, as it is a convention of comic books and graphic novels for minor text to appear as scribbles or repeating text.
Hmm.
I like that. And let's see, the director's cut and source novel show how people know that Dr. Manhattan has gone to Mars and eliminates continuity errors regarding his and Laurie's poses there.
Huh. All right. Thank you, Carrie, for all those goofs.
A try.
All right, Mr. Fred, you're up. Anything happened behind the scenes in this movie?
Behind the scenes / trivia. Okay, so Jackie Earle Haley was the only one of the main actors who was already familiar with the comic book. He actively campaigned for the part of Rosach.
Oh, cool.
Next up, when Patrick Wilson was offered the role of Dan Dreiberg, he called one of his best friends, who is a huge comic book fan, and asked him what he knew about the Watchmen comic. He told Patrick that if he was ever to do a superhero movie, that this is the one to do. Having gotten the part, Patrick invited his friend to visit the set when filming the prison escape scene.
Oh, that's cool. Oh,
that
that's
pretty cool.
When offered the role of Adrian Veidt, Matthew Goody never read the graphic novel. He called a friend who had and asked if he should even bother to read the script. Not only did the friend say yes, he insisted that Goody immediately read the graphic novel and accept the role without question. Later, after he read both the script and the novel, Goody admitted to his friend was right and to advise him to take the role without delay.
Always have good friends.
Yes, that's always right. Have good friends who know their comic books.
Here's one that Carrie already spoke to, but all of the U.S. flags in the film have 51 stars because in the film's alternate history, Vietnam became the 51st state after America won the Vietnam War. During the opening credits, the original Night Owl stops a mugging. There are Batman comic book covers and Fielder Moss posters hanging on the wall of the alley. It could be assumed the people he saves from being accosted are Thomas and Martha Wayne, parents of Bruce Wayne, who are coming out of the theater. This is further implied by a poster with the word Gotham on it. Gotham is the city in which Batman operates, of course, but since his parents live, there is no need for Bruce Wayne to become Batman in the Watchmen universe.
Cool.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a DC comic, so that makes sense that they would they would have to explain that somehow.
Tales of Black Freighter was intended to be featured within the Watchmen film, but was removed from the theatrical version once the time span of the film began pushing 3 hours. However, it can be found in the can be found as intended in the ultimate cut version of the movie, which is 3 hours and 35 minutes long, which Andrea is very familiar with.
She's so familiar and loves it so much, she's going to go back and rewatch it tonight again.
Yep, tonight.
It'll help her sleep. Okay. Skipped one here. Gerard Butler got his role in Tales of the Black Freighter after Zack Snyder couldn't find him a role in The Watchmen.
Hmm.
Interesting. Per Zack Snyder, they changed the ending of the movie because the reason the squid got taken out of the movie was so there'd be more Rosach and a little bit more of Manhattan. Because we did the math, we figured it took about 50 minutes to explain the squid appearance correctly. Otherwise, it's pretty crazy.
Hmm. Okay.
So they basically
more Manhattan schlong.
Well, they basically filled the catastrophe. They basically did it in a way that makes it obvious that it was Dr. Manhattan's powers that took out Manhattan, that took out New York.
Right, yeah.
Rather than just dropping a ginormous cephalopod on the city and causing a psychic freakout.
Which would be pretty cool as well, but...
It would be pretty cool, but again, that would need an extra 15 minutes, and I'm apparently the only one here who would have wanted the extra 15 minutes.
Why not just go for a full 4 hours? Like, if Lord of the Rings can do it,
I'm fine with that.
And if Avengers Endgame can do a 3 hour movie, I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, this is before comic book movies were allowed to go 3-4 hours.
Don't rock the boat. Speaking of rocking the boat, Andrea.
All right, so when it comes to Rotten Tomatoes, I was looking for some reviews, and a lot of the negative reviews revolved around you needing to have a background history of Watchmen to really appreciate it. So I think that all three of us that are at a disadvantage, and I think that Carrie, this is why you enjoy it so much, because you know the world a lot more. So Rotten Tomatoes says, if Watchmen doesn't earn comic book movies the utmost respect, nothing ever will.
Movie rating. So, we're trying to keep this PG. So, 1 out of 10 smiley face buttons.
With blood.
How about arms chopped off or flying squids in Manhattan?
The falling squids don't happen until the TV show.
Falling squids.
Spoilers! I'm just kidding.
Oh, so...
The thing, it happens in the first episode. It's fine.
Oh, my. Add a smiley face buttons. Let's start off with a positive. Carrie, how many smiley face buttons do you give this movie?
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 9. This is, wow. Like I said, it's as close as they can get to the comic... And they managed to boil down 12 issues beautifully, and this is after a second time watching it, and after having read the comic and having watched the TV show, I think I have a better appreciation for the movie now than I did when I first saw it. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a 9. It's gorgeous.
That's what she said. All right. I knew it was going to come one time during this episode. Andrea, how many smiley face buttons right. do you give this movie? So, here we go.
Let me just take a look. So, I don't know. It wasn't the worst movie. It really wasn't.
We have seen some bad ones.
We have. I think that I would probably give it a 4.5 or a 5. I'm going to go with 5 because it wasn't the worst And I feel like I'm at a disadvantage because I don't know the Watchmen world as much as I would want to in order to enjoy this movie. And I feel like if I would have watched a shorter version, I might have had more attention to it. And then if I would have devoted more attention to it, I would have appreciated more. And it had a really good aspects. We talked about the actors and actresses that were in this. The character building was okay. Some of the lines were fantastic. So I'm going to give it a 5.
All right. Fred, how many smiley face buttons you gonna give this thing?
Okay, so I'm trying to really figure out where this would fit. I mean, I gave Elektra and Ghost Rider a 4.9, and I gave Underdog a 4.5. Now, I gave Fantastic Four and Hancock a 5. I'll probably... This is tough. I think I'm gonna give it a 5. I was pretty happy with where the story ended, but not how it got there. I shouldn't need to be as familiar as Carrie to know the comic books to appreciate the movie. And if they were able to tell it a little bit more succinctly, I think they would have been able to bring this to at least an 8 without much trouble.
Okay. So, what was the last movie we watched?
What was it? Push.
Oh, David, come on. You're failing us, man. The last movie I have on the list is Push or Warzone. Come on, man. you gotta... No. So Punisher Warzone got a 1 from pretty much everybody. You know, Underdog for... What did I give it? I gave Underdog a 6. Now, I gave Underdog a 6, though, because I look at it for family-friendly, you know, because I'm that kind of a person. Zoom got a 2. Spawn got a 1.5 for me. How did I give The Phantom 5?
I don't know.
Because it's an awesome movie.
This was pretty family friendly. Like, they tried to make more babies in the movie.
How did I give The Shadow 6?
What?
I need to go back and redo these rankings because I don't know why I gave The Shadow 6.
Do we need to have, like, a corrective, like, deep digest of our movie ranking episode and just rebalance our list?
I think so.
We should do it. We should do it. All right. Next episode. Well, no, we maybe. We'll talk about it off podcast. Yeah, I need to go back and redo these. But as far as smiley, so this movie, it had its good moments. But for me, it just really outweighed on the negative. So I'm going to give this one 3 out of 10 smiley face buttons. But I also understand, had I have a knowledge of this movie or the background of The Watchmen, this may be a little bit easier for me to digest. So that's why. All right, next movie up on the list has already been mentioned earlier, but it's X-Men's Origins Wolverine. And we're moving into some X-Men movies. I actually really love this movie coming up. So I'm excited about digging into it. And then right after that, we're going to talk about Iron Man 2, Tim's favorite movie. Or is that Lizzie's favorite movie?
No, it's Tim's favorite movie. Okay. Lizzie hates Iron Man 2.
So Lizzie will be our special guest for Iron Man 2. And
she will?
No.
Have we discussed this with Lizzie? Has she rage tweeted us about it?
Not yet. What we need to do is tweet that out, that, hey, we're so excited here in a couple weeks to have, have Lizzie on our podcast to talk about Iron Man 2. No. So y'all keep those in mind. X-Men Origins is next, and then Iron Man 2. Well, as if nobody else has anything to say, Carrie, why don't you close us out here tonight?
Okay, so we want to hear from you. You can email us, capechronicles@randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter at Random Chatter for the entire network, or at Cape Chronicles for this this show. You can find me at Carrie Blackfire 42. That's K-E-R-I Blackfire 42. Andrea, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at KatzBears. That's K-A-T-Z-B-E-A-R-Z.
And Fred, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at FreddyWonKenobi. That's FreddyWon Kenobi.
And Mike, where can we find you?
You can find me at the DC Fanboy. It's at the DC _ Fanboy.
Excellent. And you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. Don't forget to spread the word and support us. You can leave reviews on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you leave us a review, especially on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on air. So finally, the music you hear on this podcast is High Roller Mojo by Blue Stolly. I can talk, really I can. And as silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. So until next time, guys.
Put some pants on.
You're not. Oh. Dr. Manhattan doesn't use pants.
He should.
He should.
Oh. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
All right.